not actually discuss as we move there, but it's to say, let's read the verse, text 22.
Purushasa
paraparta. Purushasa paraparta.
Mukya yastranatmiyaya.
Bhaktvala vyastranyana.
Yashyantastani bhutani.
Yashyantastani bhutani.
Yena sarvam idam tatam.
Yena sarvam idam tatam.
Purusha, the Supreme Personality. Saha, he. Para, the Supreme, that who knows is greater. Parata, the son of Pritha. Bhaktya, by devotional service. Labhyaha, can be achieved. But Ananya, unalloyed, undeviating. Yasya, who, Antastani, within, Bhutani, all of this material manifestation. Yena, by whom, Sarvam, all, Idam, whatever we can see, Tatam, is pervaded. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all pervading, and everything is situated within him. Let's read it together.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is greater than all, is attained by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all pervading, and everything is situated within him.
It is here clearly stated that the supreme destination, from which there is no return, is the abode of Krishna, the Supreme Person. The Brahma Samhita describes the supreme abode as Ananda Chinmayarasa, place where everything is full of spiritual bliss. All the variegatedness manifest there is of the quality of spiritual bliss. Nothing there is material. That variegatedness is expanded as the spiritual expansion of the Supreme Godhead Himself, for the manifestation there is totally of the spiritual energy, as explained in chapter 7. As far as this material world is concerned, although the Lord is always in the supreme abode, He is nonetheless all-pervading by His material energy. So by His spiritual and material energies, He is present everywhere, both in the material and in the spiritual universes. Yashyantastani means that everything is sustained within Him, within either His spiritual or material energy. The Lord is all-pervading by these two energies. To enter Krishna's supreme abode, or the innumerable Vaikuntha planets, is possible only by bhakti, devotional service, as clearly indicated here by the word bhaktiya. No other process can help one attain that supreme abode. The Vedas, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 3.2, also describe the supreme abode and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eko Vashi Sarva Krishna. In that abode there is only one Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose name is Krishna. He is the Supreme Merciful Deity, and although situated there as one, He has expanded Himself into millions and millions of plenary expansions. The Vedas compare the Lord to a tree standing still, yet bearing many varieties of fruits, flowers, and changing leaves. The plenary expansions of the Lord who reside over the Vaikuntha planets are four-armed, and they are known by a variety of names. Purushottama, Trivikram, Keshava, Madhava, Aniruddha, Rishikesha, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Shridhar, Vasudeva, Damodara, Janardana, Narayana, Vamana, Padmanabha, etc. The Brahma Samhita 5.37 also confirms that although the Lord is always in the supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan. He is all pervading. So that everything is going on nicely. Goloka Eva Nirasati Patilatmu. As stated in the Vedas, the Svetashvata Upanishad 16, Purasya Shaktir Dhidhaira Shruyate, Sabhani Jnana Vulapriyaracha. His energies are so expansive that they systematically conduct everything in the cosmic manifestation without a flaw, although the Supreme Lord is far, far away. So in the previous verse, we said this is for a moment, that is my abode. So this is where Krishna dwells personally. And then in this verse, he goes on to say, Purusha Satvara Bhakta, that person who lives there, who is the Purusha. Now, Purusha, of course, has a variety of meanings. Under the root mean is a person, a male, or enjoyer. But it's like those words that really, in an emphatic or pregnant sense, refers to the Lord. Just like in Spanish, Señor, it means Lord, but El Señor, the Lord. The name is Lord, this Lord, that Lord, but the Lord. So the Purusha is the Supreme Person of His Godhead. And the living entities, actually the living entities do not belong to the category of Purusha, they are Prakriti. But, because that's already been described, right, in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the living entity is Apara Prakriti, and Para Prakriti, the superior Prakriti. There is another energy, right, he describes inferior and superior energies. Those the living entities, but because the living entities are also trying to enjoy, they are also described as called Purusha, like in the Sankhya system. The living entities are described as the Purusha. It's a kind of a courtesy. But Purusha actually ultimately refers to Krishna. But here, just in case there's any question, Purusha Satvara, the Supreme. Plus means beyond everything else. That man whom there is no greater. That ultimate person. The transcendental person. The one who isn't born, who never dies, or undergoes birth or death. That is Krishna. Never recovered by material energy. Who is the source of everything. That is Purusha. Later on in the Bhagavad Gita, there's quite a bit of discussion concerning the word Purushottama as a word for Krishna. Purusha Uttama. Uttama means the transcendental person, Purushottama, the top one. Purushottama, another word. Do you have something to say?
I was just going to have a Sanskrit translation to the Purusha and the pure consciousness.
Some people may use it that way, but here in the Bhagavad Gita, it means Purusha. That's clearly the root meaning. What happens in Sanskrit is different schools can take different words and use them in different technical senses. Sometimes I see a lot. That's why I need a commentator. And just like the word Atma means self. Right? So it also can be mind, body, senses. So it's contextual. So Purusha Satvara Bhakta, that supreme person, greater than all, Bhaktya Bhaktya Sthanamana, he's a again, this chapter is about the Supreme. That's the man of the
this is kind of understood in the translation. In other words, in the previous verse it stated that he was situated in his abode. So here, he is all pervading, and everything is situated within him. So here in this verse, we get a more complete picture of the relationship of the Supreme Purusha in his abode with the material world. Namely, that although he is in his abode, he is all pervading and properly explained by his energies, and everything is situated within him. So this is a very important point of Krishna conscious philosophy, how by his energies he is present everywhere. One definition of the absolute truth is that besides which there is no other. One argument used against the notion that the absolute truth is a person or an individual is that if there were something else other than or against the absolute, then the absolute would be relative because it would be relating to something else. And that something else, say a world or other living entities, would limit, put a limit on the absolute truth. Therefore, there is nothing else, there is no world, there are no other living entities, the whole thing is illusion. That's the Mayavadi reason. The answer to this is, of course, what you've then done is also limit the absolute truth by saying, of course, that by depriving him of relationships and individuality and other things like that, reducing it to a big zero. But as far as the objection goes, there is Krishna and there is the world, but in a sense, these energies are also Krishna. So it's just varieties of ways of being absolute. So there is nothing but Sri Krishna. So when we talk about the absolute, is that by which there is no other? Yes, this, everything you see is Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna. But the other side of it is that nothing is Krishna save and except his own primeval personality. Because there is internal reality, so there's Krishna and Krishna's energies. Nothing is different from Krishna, but Krishna is different from everything. Do you agree with this philosophy? No?
Seems to be
agree. Yeah, that's right. Nothing is different from Krishna. That's our poem. Nothing is different from Krishna, but Krishna is different from everything. So that answers the objection. A limitation being placed on the absolute truth, because there is nothing different from Krishna. But at the same time, he remains aloof from his energies, that he puts forward his energy and he doesn't disappear, he doesn't lose his personality, he's not dissipated in his original existence throughout the creation, as some people would imagine. So he is all pervading by his material energy. His spiritual and material energy is present everywhere. So Prabhupada goes on to describe this bhaktya for attaining the supreme abode. And he also describes how, although there is one supreme personality of Godhead, he has expanded himself into millions and millions. Notice he says it's millions and millions of plenary expansions. Now these plenary expansions are not energetic expansions like we are. When he's talking about the plenary expansions, it means the Vishnu Tattva expansions. Not the Jiva Tattva, not Shakti Tattva, but the Vishnu Tattva. So each one of these expansions is God. And Bhagavatam says in the famous verse, there's just been a description of various expansions and incarnations of God. Sukadeva Goswami says, Ete Chaksa Kala Insan. All these different, what I've just described, they are either Amsha or Kala. That means, Amsha means part, or Kala is an expansion, or Kala, expansion of an expansion. But he said, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. That means Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God Himself. That even though these various expansions whose names are given, Purushottama, Trivikram, Keshava, Madhava, Anikunda, Rishikesh, all these different forehand Vishnu forms, they're God. They're Vishnu. Tattva expansions. Nevertheless, Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. He is the original, and everyone is expanded out of Him. Although it's a non-temporal act, somehow or other, we're not going to stand. But this also answers the objection that if God is a person, He's limited. Brahma Samhita says, Ananta Rupam. That means inless form. His form is inless. So how can that be? The idea of form, or rupam, means already there's a boundary or a border. Every time you draw a form, when you make an outline of a form, it's the border that defines the form. Ananta rupam, how can that be inless form? Here's the idea. Here, first of all, one understanding. One purport is that he has endless forms, millions and millions of Vishnu expansions, and Lord Brahma saw them. The pastime of Krishna in the Bhagavatam, where Lord Brahma is bewildered by Krishna, is very instructive in this way, because at one point Krishna shows Brahma himself as he is. And Brahma sees all these different Vishnu expansions all at once. And he sees that they're all none different from Krishna, and yet they're all manifest there. And he sees also that that he's here and Krishna's there, and yet everything is within Krishna. And his mind just boggles. And then Krishna very neatly covers it all up again, so there he sees Krishna. So it's too much for his mind, man. That's Brahma. So it's too much for him to handle. So he has endless forms. And of course, his form also possesses infinite potency. That's another sense of Ananta Rupa. So this is there is variety. So there's variety in the spiritual world. Variegated manifest there is a quality of spiritual bliss. That's the nature of spiritual variety. We don't hear here the problem is that we are spiritual, but everything that we know, perceive, taste, touch, smell, is material. Knowing is spiritual, but the known objects are material. So there's this big qualitative difference. In the spiritual world, the knower and that which is unknown is of the same spiritual quality. So there's a big, big difference quality of life between the spiritual world. So there's variegatedness. And spiritual life. Oneness also. The oneness is there because everything is Brahma, everything is spirit. But that's a lame idea to think that because of the spiritual oneness that negates variety. Then that's a material idea. There's duality between one and many. In the material world, something is one and there's not many, or there's many, there's not one. spiritual life is both there. There's oneness and variety together. From a material point of view, that may be contradictory. That's the way it is. Any questions about this?
You mentioned Krishna's other expansions, Shakti.
Well, Shakti Tattva is Radharani, Gopis, Lakshmis.
What's Shakti?
Shakti means power. Ultimately, Durga. All female side, Shakti Tattva. There's different tattvas. Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, Shakti Tattva, Shiva Tattva. Shiva has his own tattva. It's not Jiva, but it's not exactly Vishnu.
Is Subhadra Shakti Tattva?
Yes.
Is there some... I don't mean inferiority, I guess, but is Shakti Tattva of the same potency as Vishnu Tattva?
It is the potency of Vishnu Tattva. Shakti Tattva is the potency of Vishnu. That's what Shakti means. Power. Potency. Yeah, already is addressed to that Shakti question. You get politics. There's a lot of competition, actually, goes on. When it comes down to Vada and Krishna, who's actually in control? According to our philosophy, Radharani has the upper hand. Because although ontologically Krishna is the origin and he's the supreme, the way it works out that Radharani controls Krishna.
Devotees
also control Krishna. That's the big secret of devotional service. Krishna's controlled by love. That's why the meaning of the next devotion is described. And it says devotional service is very rare. Why? Because Krishna doesn't give it away to anybody and everybody. Because he becomes controlled by love. Prabhupada said devotional service is transcendentally more powerful than Krishna.
Isn't there a big thing about the pain that is made where Krishna was in a sense mourning because Radha had left him?
Mm-hmm. That's describing it. Prabhupada didn't like that Krishna should be depicted. It's too easy to misunderstand.
He's just an exception.
These are different names of why don't you read about this and these expansions. They're all named. You know what the names mean? Purushottama described in the Trivikrama. Sometimes it's the name of Vamana Deva, but it's also the name of what it takes three steps. Mm-hmm. Keshava means he who has fine hair, and so on. Anyway, they will find in the capsule description of these things, teaching of Lord Chaitanya, where they describe. And according to their four arms and four symbols, and all possible arrangements of four arms and four symbols is what? Four factorial, right? Which is 24. So those 24 are described according to the order of the symbols that they're held, and which names they have according to that. That And it's also described how he's first as Krishna, in Balarama, in Mahashankarshan, in the quadruple expansion, in Vasudeva, Krishna, Anuruddha, and Shankarshan, and so on. All the things are very detailed. It comes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, summarized in pieces of the Chaitanya. If you really want to know the meaning of all these names, we can look them up for you. I don't know, I'm not sure of all of them. Padmanabha, I mean, it's lotus and eagle. Who has a lotus and eagle? Yeah?
Yeah, you're saying that my bodies think that if Krishna is a person, or the Absolute Truth is a person, then he has form, and therefore he's limited.
Mm-hmm.
But how much is, or because we perceive things three-dimensionally, that we would think of form as being that way?
Yeah, that's another, of course, aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of rejecting form is all based on the idea that what we experience or perceive in the material world as form doesn't apply to Krishna. And then you'll make them, and of course, Krishna is spoken, the Absolute is spoken of in the Vedas as without form. Prabhupada's already quoted from the Upanishads where the form is one verse is denied and then another verse is asserted. So what it means is that when form is denied, yet no material form. Well, then you could say, well, how different, what right, one could ask, you're a little better philosopher, what right do you have if the spiritual form is so different from material form, what right have you got to use the word form at all? And throw on everything else, throw on name, color, and so on. If it's transcendental and doesn't, is different, that different from the, you know, all our language collapses. This is, of course, what my body philosophy is based on. It's based on the collapse of language. It's based on this notion that here's our language, which is a product of the material world, it's embedded in the material world. And so when we go further and further away from the material world with the transcendence, all our language starts to collapse and become inadequate. So finally, the truest utterance you can make is silence, which denotes this failure of your language to approach the Absolute Truth. Now, this is all very reasonable, and there's a lot to be said for that, but it's not the final word. And where we differ from this, well, we differ from this in a lot of ways. One way is the notion that language, to me, one thing is topsy-turvy, is the notion that language is originally embedded in the material world, and then somehow we have to stretch it to fit the Absolute Truth, and then the lower band snaps, and we just become Mayavadis. Actually, the fact of the matter is, since everything comes from God, language is originally there in the Absolute Truth, and if anything, it's been stretched to apply to this material world. So it's not that here we have an idea of form which we're stretching to the limit to talk about God. No, we're using the word form. And it's true, right now in our conditioned state, when we talk of Krishna's form, we really don't know exactly what that denotes. Because we haven't had the experience of Krishna's form yet. So we don't know what it denotes. Nevertheless, we use this language, and how do we know it's accurate? Because it's coming from the spiritual world down. It's not us trying to bring our rubber band language up to the spiritual world. It's not that. Because here it is, it comes from the spiritual world down to us. So we just engage our senses, and so if Krishna is described this way, Ayum Panantam or Avendam, the Layatam, we accept this. This is it. And by chanting this and hearing this, then I'll come to understand eventually that will purify my mind and senses, and one day I'll understand what that flute is. I'll understand what that blue means. But meanwhile, I just accepted it. That's the difference between ourselves and the mind. It's coming down. It's coming down from Krishna. And that's where the language originally belongs. So it's not where we're stretching there. It's been stretched up to apply this word. Any other questions? Now we go on. We have time to do text number 23. Now this is another section that begins, which concerns the yogic art of leaving the body at a particular time. Remember the beginning of the Sat Chakra Yoga system that we discussed. So part of that Sat Chakra Yoga system is you raise your life between the soul, between the eyebrows, the Brahma Ranga, and then at will, you leave the body. And the body bursts into flames. So now he's reverting to that technical science a little bit to discuss when you do that, when you leave the body, where you go. Because it's talking about different destinations. So that's what it's going to talk about. Now, from 23 to 26. So let's read the Sanskrit. Yatra kale prana vrittim.
Yatra kale prana vrittim.
Avrittim chayara yoginah.
Avrittim chayara yoginah.
Prayatayantam kalam.
Prayatayantitam kalam.
Vakshyami bharatarshava.
Yakshami Bharatarshava.
Yatra at which kale time to and anavritim don't return. Avritim return. Cha also. Eva certain. Yoginaha different kinds of mystics. Rayataha having departed. Yanti came. Come back. Kalam time. Bhakshyami, I shall describe. Bharata Krishna, O best of the Bharatas. Translation. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times which, passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. We repeat it together.
O best of the Bhartas, I shall now explain to you the different times of
which passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Purport. The unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Lord, who are totally surrendered souls, do not care when they leave their bodies or by what method. They leave everything in Krishna's hands and so easily and happily return to Godhead. But those who are not unalloyed devotees and who depend instead on such methods of spiritual realization as karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga must leave the body at a suitable time and thereby be assured whether or not they will return to the world of birth and death. If the yogi is perfect, he can select the time and situation for leaving this material world. But if he is not so expert, his success depends on his accidentally passing away at a certain suitable time. The suitable times at which one passes away and does not come back are explained by the Lord in the next verse. According to Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushana, the Sanskrit word kala used here refers to the presiding deity of time. So, here Prabhupada is summarizing what's going to be the whole discussion. According to according to the arrangement of time, and it's not simply mechanical. Here, as he says, Baladeva Vibhushana points out, and that's whose commentary the Prabhupada is mostly relying on, this Bhagavad Gita. When it refers to time, it also refers to the presiding deity of time. And we'll see in the next verse the fire, the light, the fortnight of the waxing of the waning moon, etc. And all of these refer to various predominating deities. So at certain times, there are certain arrangements by various predominating deities that you can take advantage of. As I said, this is a technical science. But anyway, those who know this, they wait for the proper arrangement by the controlling, certain controlling deities, and then they leave. And if they leave at the right time, they don't return. They leave at the wrong time. Back. So one has to become expert. But the point is that Prabhupada says here, and Krishna himself makes this point by reading this verse, that pure devotees really don't have to worry about the right time or circumstances for leaving the body, because Krishna takes such devotees back to God. And the other business is not really anything that the devotees have to be concerned about. Nevertheless, this is explained on sort of fairness on the subject matter, because remember, this is Arjuna's original question. So this topic here of the right time to leave the body has received a lot of discussion in Vedantic circles. So therefore, she wants to deal with this.
Does yogic expertise necessarily entail purity?
No.
So if they leave at the right time, if through yogic expertise one leaves at the right time and never comes back, then one's...
Well, because you may have the ability to leave at the right time, but if you're not pure, you're going to want to come back.
Oh.
If you're not pure, the kingdom of God is not a place you want to go.
So you will your way back.
Huh?
So you will your way back.
I'm sorry?
One wills one's way back.
Yes,
one desires one's way back.
If you're not pure, you'll go to the heavenly place. You can go wherever you like. Or you can make your aim there. But you read that, and Kashyapu had incredible yogic powers. He was set up in demigods and everybody. But he was pure. Wow. So as you get the dark side of force, the finds these things for their own, sinister purposes. Because some of these things, I'm being a little facetious.
Oh.
But there's black arts, like we have in the West, there's black magic. I mean, for example, take the word witch. It comes from the word wit, which comes from the word Veda. And there's like a whole the whole underground of various forms of practices which are probably the equivalent of the West we call black magic.
What about white magic?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not the devotional service. But there's various sorts of tantric practices and things like that. You have to get a corpse and squat on the chantry mantras, right? Something like that. Eat it, all these things. all we know about in the modern West Indies, and there isn't there. Oh, in Korea, there are a lot of things in Bhagavatam. Okay, so we'll stop there. There's no more time that we go on. So today's the last class we have this week. Text 22, we had in the purport, there was a discussion of the relationship between Krishna and the material world. And how does the material world relate to Krishna according to that discussion? Spiritual and material energies, he is present everywhere, both in the material and the spiritual universes. Yashyantastani means that everything is sustained within him, within either his spiritual or material energy. The Lord is all pervaded by these two energies. So the relationship of the material energy to Krishna is that it is, the material world of Krishna is that it is Krishna's energy, and actually Krishna's present in that form by his material energy, which there's a sense in which it's non-different from him, although he also transcends it. We discussed that last time, so the philosophy of Chincha Veda Veda Tapa. So that was the discussion we had in text 22. Then I think you read text 23, where he introduces the subject. There's a big discussion on this subject that's in the Chandogya Upanishad. A lot from this chapter is comments on the stuff that's in the Chandogya Upanishad. So Krishna has said, I shall explain to you the different times at which passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Now, text 24, where we start today. And this is described. So we'll read the Sanskrit. Agnir Jyotir Ahar Shukla
Agnir Jyotir Ahar Shukla
Sammasa Uttarayanam
Sammasa Uttarayanam
Tatra Prayata Gacchanti
Tatra Prayata Gacchanti
Brahma Brahma Vido
Brahma, Brahma, Vidojana.
Agni, fire, Jyoti, light, Aha, day, Shukla, the white fortnight, Sat, Masa, the 6 months, Uttara, Ayanam, when the sun passes on the northern side, Tatra, there, Prayata, those who pass away, Gacchanti, go, Brahma, to the absolute, Brahma, Vidana, who know the absolute, jana, persons. Translation. Those who know the Supreme Brahma attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence, how do you say that, fiery or fury? Fiery?
Fiery.
Fiery. fiery influence of the fiery God in the light at an auspicious moment of the day during the fortnight of the waxing moon or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. So let's read this verse together. Those who know the Supreme Brahma attain that Supreme by passing away from the world through the influence of the fiery God in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When fire, light, day, and the fortnight of the moon are mentioned, it is to be understood that over all of them there are various presiding deities who make arrangements for the passage of the soul. At the time of death, the mind carries one on the path to the new life. If one leaves the body at the time designated above, either accidentally or by arrangement, it is possible for him to attain the impersonal Brahmajyoti. Mystics who are advanced in yoga practice can arrange the time and place to leave the body. Others have no control. If by accident they leave at an auspicious moment, then they will not return to the cycle of birth and death, but otherwise there's every possibility that they will have to return. However, for the pure devotee in Krishna consciousness, there is no fear of returning, whether he leaves the body at an auspicious or inauspicious moment by accident or arrangement. The Prabhupada points out that all these terms refer to the, not just to various times, but these times are presided over by certain deities. Agni, during the fire, the influence, whenever this Agni is supreme, by some astrological calculation you can discover where this is, And Jyoti, and Shukla, the white fortnight. The month is divided into two fortnights, called Shukla and Krishna. Shukla meaning white and Krishna meaning black. Shukla, when the moon is waxing, and Krishna when the moon is waning. And Satmasa Uttarayana, the 6 months when the sun passes in the north. That's to say, in the winter time. Yeah, right. In the summertime. When does it pass in the sun? Sometimes. You don't even notice. Anyway, during the sun rises further and further south as the sun increases. And during the winter, it rises further and further, I think, north. And also, that's what it means, 6 months. First 6 months. Who used to know that? Anybody else? You get longer and shorter days because of it, and you know, it's just like from a certain time the sun changes. It rises from the south, it rises from the north.
Oh, the equinoxes?
Yeah, the equinoxes.
The solstices. You gotta
be careful not to put your feet on the books. The solstice is at the middle of the forest, right? So anyway, during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. Now what Prabhupada is saying here is that at certain points a kind of corridor opens up to the Brahmajyoti. And if you happen to, by arrangement, leave at that time, then you go to the Brahmajyoti. And he's saying here that if by accident someone leaves at that time, they also go to the Brahmajyoti. If by accident they leave at an auspicious moment, then they will not return at the cycle of birth and death. I understand that that's a pretty rare occurrence. I've heard of it that you see these, Prabhupada showed that devotees, when he went with him to the big festival at Prayag, Mahalabad, there's a Kumbh Mela, it's a big religious fair in India. And then every 12 years there's a Maha Mela, and every 144 years is a super big, big ones. There's a huge one recently. And there are mystic yogis there who Prabhupada said were 300, 400, 500 years old. And they were waiting around for the right time to leave. Apparently that's the reason they would stay around so long. And they would come down out of the Himalayas and everything to attend this gathering, the Kumbh Mela. It's quite a spectacle.
I guess there'll be a mass death somewhere.
I don't know. Anyway, I've heard it said, I don't know if Prabhupada said this directly, that there's a reason why they stay around a long time to make sure that there's some very auspicious time for leaving the body. They may not be all heading to the Brahmajyoti either. I mean, wanting to go some other place, and they know this is the time, so they're waiting. Vishakha had slides of somebody who was 300 or 400 years old. She took pictures. Any questions on this? So here are the things, in the fire, in the light, in the day, which means he said an auspicious moment in the day, so the right time during the day. In the white fortnight, in the 6 months, so there are five conditions mentioned. So they got Shanti Brahma, they go to Brahma. Those who leave that time, these five conditions. For one who does not return. This is all about whether you return or you don't return. If you go back, at the very beginning, this has been a discussion throughout this chapter of those who go and who don't go. Arjuna has asked, how can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? Krishna's talking about if you think of me, then you'll come to me without fail. And tells you how to come to him. And then explains the system of yoga, what's it called? For leaving the body?
Shat chakra.
Yes, Shat chakra yoga system. So here it is. Satchaka yoga systems, so this is more or less continuing that idea of controlling the time and the place.
I have a question about this text. It says, if by accident they leave at an auspicious moment, then they will not return to the cycle of birth or death, but otherwise they probably will have to. So, if the person leaves by accident, are they referring to a Krishna conscious person, or
no?
And it might be anybody. So why would the mystic yogi return, but not just the person who just by sheer accident?
Mystic yogi won't return if he leaves at this time too.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. So anyone who leaves at this time goes back to Godhead. The kind of corridor opens up to the Brahmajyoti. You leave at that time, these different gods escort you back.
Okay. I misread the sentence.
So the yogis go back because they wait to precise that time. They pray to all these demigods and everything. They've got it all set up. You know. Others, there's just kind of a standby. They take their chance and they have to get on the plane. You know, you can just like you want to fly to London, and then you can get your reservations, you can get it all set up in advance, so you know you have a seat on the plane and your passage is guaranteed. And there's somebody that flies standby, they may make it, they may not make it. It's easy. Some people, they just happen to leave at the right time.
It says that they return to the impersonal
Brahma Jyoti. Yeah, this is a corridor to the impersonal
Brahma Jyoti. I thought people who did that eventually came back to the
such a long time. Yeah, they do. It says they can fall down again from the Brahma Jyoti.
I thought that they had to because you can't do anything.
Yeah, they do. They do. Although human terms, it may be a long time before they do. And Prabhupada says very rarely does someone get promoted from the Brahma Jyoti to Vaikuntha. Very, very rare. Usually you're in the Brahma Jyoti, and then the dormant desire for activities comes up, and you go back to the material world. Bhutana, the witch. She got the same liberation as Krishna's mother.
Yes,
by demigod calculations and enjoy
life by drinking Soma Ras. They eventually return to Earth. This means that on the moon there are higher classes of living beings, although they may not be perceived by the gross senses. So here are five characteristics. One who attains the moon and embarked a day comes back. You go up to the moon, but there's a quick return ticket. After 10,000 years of the demigods, which means, well, one day of theirs is our 6 months, so you can figure out for a few years calculation. So, where before there was ugly fire, here there's Duma smoke. Before there was Jyoti light, here there's Ratri light. Krishna, 1, 2, 3, 4. Here there seem to be four, that's interesting. One, two, three, four, five. For attaining Brahma Jyoti, and for the other, four different signs are given. The auspicious time has four characteristics. Smoke the night, the fortnight, the rain, moon, 6 months when the sun travels in the south. These are inauspicious. He attains the moon planet. That's a heavenly planet. He says here there are higher classes of living beings, but they may not be perceived by the gross senses. We've discussed this before. Something familiar to people on the moon, as described in the Vedic literature, and it's a heavenly planet, the rivers of nectar, and so on like that. But you can't, it has to be achieved the right body in order to enjoy it. They drink Soma Ras, some kind of heavenly intoxicant, Soma juice. And they come back in the day when they return. And that return has already been discussed in the report.
What might be an auspicious moment when they fuck them off? What might characterize an auspicious moment?
Oh, during the day? It's a technical thing. Don't have to either. The whole point of this discussion is actually you don't have to know this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole literature on auspicious and inauspicious moments. There's one devotee who had this book about inauspicious and auspicious moments to do things, and he was attempting to follow all this stuff. And he was working with Prabhupada in Sanskrit, and he really got into this book, and Prabhupada said, if I follow this book, I never get anything done. But you'll find people who were into it, and they never start a journey on a Thursday morning, and there's no real thing. But for leaving the body.
Suspicious. I mean, not suspicious.
Inauspicious for.
Superstitious.
Well, that's what you would call a superstition. People call it superstition. Yeah. Maybe there's something to it. For leaving the body, anyway, this is auspicious moments. There are times, actually, which are better, worse,
according to astrological, astrological calculation.
What do you mean by slow? What do you mean by passing on the slow?
It's not. It refers to the prevalence of some demigod who's in charge of smoke. Yes. When those times are, and the times he's prevalent. Somebody in charge of smoke. Fog's different. It's smoke.
Volcanoes.
Okay, text number 26. Shukla Krishna Yagati Hete
Shukla Krishna Yagati Hete
Jagata Shashvate Mate
Jagata Shashvate Mate
Ekaya Yatyana Vrityam
Ekaya Yatyana Vrityam
Manyaya Vartate Punah
Manyaya Vartate Punah.
Shukla replied, Krishna and darkness, gati, ways of passing, usurpa, ete, these two, jagata, of the material world, shasvate, of the Vedas, mate, in the opinion, ekaya, by one, yati, goes, anavritin, to no return, aninyaya, by the other, avartate, comes back, punaha, again. Translation. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when one passes in darkness, he returns. Let's read it together. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world. One in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when one passes in darkness, he returns. The same description of departure and return is quoted by Acharya Muladeva Vidyabhushana from the Chandogya Upanishad 5.10.3-5. Those who are fruitive laborers and philosophical speculators from time immemorial are constantly going and coming. Actually, they do not attain ultimate salvation, for they do not surrender to Krishna. So that just summarizes the previous discussions on this. The auspicious times and inauspicious times. And Shukla called Shukla light and dark times. Okay? So that's the end of that discussion. Now, text number 27, Krishna sums up the whole thing. Text 27. Naite Shristi Patar Partha Janam.
Naite Shristi Patar Janam.
Yogi Muhyati Kashchana
Yogi Muhyati Kashchana
Tasmat Sareshu Kaleshu
Tasmat Sareshu Kaleshu
Yoga Yukto Bhavarjuna
Yoga Yukto Bhavarjuna.
Na, never. Ete, these two, Kristi, different paths, Partha, Usanda, Pritta, Jana, even if he knows, Yogi, the devotee of the Lord, Mukhyati, is bewildered. Kaschana, ini, tasmat, therefore, sarveshu, kaleshu, always. Yogayukta, engaged in Krishna consciousness, bhava, just become, Arjuna, O Arjuna. Translation. Although the devotee know these two paths, O Arjuna. They are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. Let's read it together. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna,
They are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. Srila Prabhupada's prayer. Krishna is here advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths the soul can take when leaving the material world. A devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these two paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always dovetailed in the service, and this will make one's paths to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain, and direct. The word yoga yukta is especially significant in this verse. One who is firm in yoga is constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness in all his activities. Sri Rupa Goswami advises, anasaptasya vishaya yatarham upayunjaka. One should be unattached in material affairs and do everything in Krishna consciousness. By this system, which is called Yukta Vairagya, one attains perfection. Therefore, the devotee is not disturbed by these descriptions, because he knows that his passage to the Supreme Abode is guaranteed by devotional service. So, although the devotee knows these two paths of Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. So here, finally, he makes this point. So the devotees may know these things. They may be knowers of these two paths. But his business is not to become bewildered by them, but the Sanskrit is very obvious. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, therefore at all times. In other words, whether it's auspicious or inauspicious, at all times, you should be yoga yukta. You should be very firmly fixed in relationship to me. So you don't have to worry if sarveshu kaleshu, if at all times, you're firm, fixed in Krishna consciousness, then whenever you leave your body, it's auspicious. So the devotees, their preparation for leaving, they don't make bother to make preparation for leaving their body at the right time. As Prabhupada says here, is to be, how to be ready, he says, is to be always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And how is that? Always dovetailed in his service. Prabhupada, dovetailed means that means to be using the mind and senses always in Krishna service. In other words, our propensities to think and to act and to do various things with our hands and legs and eyes and tongue and all that. The optical senses, all those have to be engaged in Krishna service constantly, one way or another. You get tired of chanting japa, then you can chant in kirtan. You get tired of kirtan and japa, you can go cook. You get tired of cooking, you can go worship the deity. There's variegated service of yoga yukta. So you can always, in varieties of different ways, always be engaged in Krishna service. Yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya. Renunciation by linking up everything in Krishna service. In other words, not by rejecting the senses and the sense of it, but by utilizing it in Krishna service. So he says that's the best way to be absorbed in Krishna service. Any questions about that? So that's the summary of that whole discussion.
Today, when the fellow asked me what I thought of superstition. I gave him a basic dictionary description, and I thought, did one
This is not a lot of what people think is. Like, for example, we might say, we have this philosophy that food, for example, carries karma. So that if you've eaten something cooked by a sinful person, you'll also get a sinful reaction. Somebody who doesn't know this will say, oh, that's just superstition. That's that superstition means an unfounded belief. But a lot of what maybe people think of as superstition, there may be something to it. So actually in the Vedas you'll find many things that people would say, like especially as I was saying, auspicious and inauspicious. They say if you're starting a journey and you see a cow with her calf, it's really a great auspicious sign. It's a sign that everything's going to be going great. But if you see a man carrying an empty bucket, it's an inauspicious sign. I mean,
these are these things. You know. Ritualistic.
Huh?
Ritualistic.
Anyway, it's maybe ritualistic or not, I don't, you know, some people get into that stuff. That's not our thing, you know. I mean, because again, it's the same thing. You don't have to worry. I know some devotees who get into this stuff. Whether or not it's true or false, that's another thing. But the point is, if you're taking your journey in Krishna's service, you don't, it's auspicious. Just as if you're Krishna conscious, you don't have to worry about where to leave your body. Auspicious or inauspicious, doesn't matter. But other things that they would say are superstitious are important. Like it is important. You do better off if you don't eat food, and especially grains that's cooked by sinful people. Because it does, it carries karma. And actually, you get sick. You can actually get physically ill. So that some people may say, oh, that's superstition. There are ways that that happens. Or the notion that the president of the United States, for example, takes on some sinful reaction. He's 1/6 the sins committed by the populace. And that's a figure in the Bible. When he collects the taxes, he also collects the sins, unless he preaches Krishna consciousness. Yeah, you should not aspire to that job. But that's knowledge. You know, these are things that we know and that they don't know. Because there's a whole source of knowledge.
So I would, there are signs that people who know these things. I mean, when I was, one of the things that kind of really threw me about before I became a devotee is I met somebody who was, actually one of the first things that happened was I got involved in something. I met somebody who used to, this is way back in 1963 or something, even before they were hippies. I met a guy who was an analyst, psychoanalyst, and he showed me the tarot deck. There was fortune telling cards and tarot. And he taught me how to use them. I got really good at it. And I could sit down and see the future. Actually, you don't really see the future, you just see the present. But if you see the present really good, you can see the future too. But I got a good, you know, and then I began to think, well, it just worked. So I began to think, what kind of a universe is this? If something like this works. And then later on I met somebody who was involved with astrology. And I got into astrology and I found out that there was a certain amount of validity to that. And that made me realize that everything I had been taught me was really, really wrong. These old ancient superstitions. Actually, there's at least some validity to them. So, that's just like Prabhupada said about astrology. Of course, Vedic astrology is much, much more accurate than the current Western astrology. But Prabhupada said it's a science. But he also said it's a material science. It deals with your karma. Well, this guy that was here, this Dr. Kamlesh, was reading everybody's palms. You know? It's a science. But ultimately, it all deals with your just like there's a passage in Prabhupada said, when you clap your hands in front of the deities, all the lines and poems of your hands change. So actually, devotees ultimately have no business with that stuff. Now you may consult with an astrologer or something like that, but you can't take it too seriously. Because that's karma. There's a text in the seventh canto of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj says that I am under the strong planetary influence of Krishna. He uses the term Krishna Graha. So Graha is the term they use for a planet, especially as it exercises astrological influence. Graha grabs a hold of you, controls you. So he says Krishna Graha, Krishna, who is like a strong planetary influence. So for any devotee, there's another planet on the chart that they can't calculate. That's the Krishna Graha. So you can't take that too seriously. People who are actually devotees, it's the same thing. It's the exact same thing parallel. Because you see that, people have gone to India now and they've got into astrology and they've got into this and they've got into other things and sort of some Krishna conscious Vedic sciences. But the same instruction here that applies to this knowing when to leave and when not to leave applies to all these things. The devotee doesn't have to be bewildered by it. He just has to be yogi nidhita, as described here. It's all taken care of. But sometimes you find that devotees, they're not so weak, and they get very, very interested in astrology and these things. This term may be useful, maybe it has some useful, it should have been in life. I was with some devotees in India one year, and we brought some, at that time it was on sale, I guess it didn't catch on, a shaving cream. You squirt it out in your hand and it would heat it up. Right? So you put on a hot ladder, so you lather in your hand and it gets hot. Some devotee brought some of this to India, and so there was some Bengali kid there, or one of the village men, and he showed it to him. The guy held out his hand, he squirted the foam out, and the guy felt it, and it got hot in his hand. And he looked at the devotee and he went, Bhagavan, Bhagavan, God, God. He thought it was a miracle. I just didn't know how it was done.
That's a decision.
Yeah. Any other questions? Then we'll stop there. We have one more verse, then we finish the chapter, and we'll review. I guess we'll spend 2 days here.